It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Oh, indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Steve, it is Friday. You made it. All right.
Yes. That's all I'm going to say. Yes.
Okay. And in studio with me is Ben Martin.
Glad to be here, Kim.
You know, last year we went through the Federalist Papers on the air, and people loved it. And so we thought, what can we do this year? And we are going to go through some of the important speeches and documents of the American founding. And today we've got four different things that we'll talk about. We'll start that in the second segment. And my friends, you are going to learn so much. You know, Ben, you had done a class about America's founding heritage that I did with you. And I came away, I learned so much, and I was inspired. And so we're bringing that to our listeners today.
That's right. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. Not only the speeches and documents, but the events surrounding them.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. And this show is brought to us by the Harris family, and I am so appreciative of their partnership as well. I'm really blessed, as many of you know. I'm a true entrepreneur. I buy my time for my radio shows, which it gives me all kinds of journalistic freedom. But with every freedom, there's a duty, and that is to have these great sponsors. So thank you to the Harris family. Go to my website and take a look at all of these great people that I get to work with. I highly recommend each and every one of them. And as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. You can vote your way into socialism, but it is really tough to get back out of it. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or as the real hidden one, Steve, and that's the unpredictable and excessive taxation.
Probably the one I fear the most.
Mm-hmm. And if something is a good idea, then you shouldn't have to use force to implement it, right, Ben?
That's true. And you said what you said before about with every freedom, there's a duty. And that's the thing we talk about when we talk about liberty, a duty, a responsibility.
And I was having a conversation with someone that said the founders really talked about liberty. And you've always said that liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. I use the freedom versus force, force versus freedom. But within that context, it is really the definition of liberty, because with every freedom, there is a corresponding duty.
There is.
Okay. So with that, first of all, I think it's important that we always be grateful. And I always like to start off and just say how grateful I am for this team that I get to work with, producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. It is an honor every morning to come in here and know that we have this team that are working diligently to do the best we can as we bring this information forward. So, Steve, you know, I really appreciate all of you.
Thank you. And, again, I'm the one with the mic out of all those people that you mentioned, but on behalf of all of them, we thank you right back.
Okay. And you listeners, this is why we do it, is so that we can engage in this battle of ideas. So you have a purpose. You are treasured. You're valued. So today, go out and strive for excellence and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Go to my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you've got to take a look at these show recaps. Steve, I thought I was going to fall off my chair laughing when I saw what Zach had done on Cody Hubley's op-ed regarding this whole plastic ban. He took a big plastic bag and put it on a picture on the Capitol.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
I saw that.
Did
yes.
you find that funny?
I did. I was like, what is this?
Anyway, it is so creative. Cody's piece is so good. He came at this, you know, he's a millennial, and he came at it. He said, I didn't have any really preconceived notions about this. He said, this is not about saving the environment. He said, if 10 cents a bag saves the environment, maybe I'm in. But he said, it comes down to control. And that is what we see across the spectrum is control. That's what they want. That's what socialism is it controls all of these things that as free people make our life better, like transportation and education and energy, housing, water, broadband, healthcare. You know, all those things, if we have freedom within those, then everyday people thrive and prosper. But when government gets involved, typically the supply goes down, the quality goes down, and the price goes up.
There you go.
So on that, our inspiration for today, because one of the writings we're going to be talking about or speeches is Thomas Paine. So I went to Thomas Paine because we have all these people say, I don't want to engage in a conversation because I'm offended. And this is what Thomas Paine said. He says, he who dares not offend cannot be honest. I thought that was pretty amazing. And so on that note, I do need to explain Thomas Paine was an English-born American political activist, philosopher, political theorist, and revolutionary. He authored the two most influential pamphlets at the start of the American Revolution and inspired the Patriots in 1776 to declare independence from Great Britain. Historian Saul K. Padover described him as a corset maker by trade, a journalist by profession, and a propagandist by inclination. Thomas Paine was born in 1737, and he died in 1809.
And he was brought over to America by Benjamin Franklin.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he did. Benjamin Franklin interviewed him over there. Benjamin Franklin was bringing people from France, from Europe. And he was in France at the time. He was recruiting people like Lafayette and all these people and giving them a commission to come back over here. And he met him at a talking discussion with other people in a coffee house or a tavern. And he was impressed with him, and he said, here's a commission. Go over there and see him. We need you in America.
And we did.
We did.
Okay. A little levity. One of the other producers came in and put this on my desk yesterday morning. Somehow he got this. This was an immediate press release yesterday. It's Colorado's Bernie Journey. It's a caravan of Colorado volunteers for Bernie Sanders. They're going to head to Sioux City for the Iowa caucus. And so they're going to be leaving Denver next Friday morning, January 31st. And they'll be there on the ground. And so I thought, well, let's have some Bernie jokes. So what are you ready for these, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Always.
Okay, number one, Bernie Sanders may be old, but he loves modern technologies such as socialist media. Number two, how does a Bernie Sanders supporter starve? He elects Bernie Sanders as president. And lastly, what do Bernie supporters call their roommates? Mom and Dad. Okay, I want to talk about impeachment. Before we do that, though, I had a message from a listener. We had talked about Jefferson County. They are reducing the sheriff's budget by $5.5 million. And because of that, the sheriff's department is releasing inmates from the jail because of these budget cuts. Now, bear in mind, from what we can tell, the Jefferson County revenues for 2019 were about $560 million. And they're cutting the sheriff's department by $5.5 million, which I think, you know, that's about 1%. So this listener, I think, really nailed it. We talked about it as well, and here we go. He said, I listened to your coverage of the prison capacity reduction in Jefferson County, reportedly to save money. That isn't it at all. It is the revenge for not securing the additional revenue sought. And so that was that Jefferson County 1A detabering Jefferson County, and the voters said no. He said, these bureaucrats know that we only want essential services, so that is what they cut when they don't get their way. During sequestration, what did Obama cut? Air traffic controllers and national parks. At Mount Rushmore, road turnoffs were blocked with traffic cones and monitored to ensure that nobody stopped. Now, it costs nothing to allow someone to stop at a roadside pull output, but it does cost extra to put up cones and monitor these spots. The bureaucrat who decided how to allocate money in Jefferson County should be fired and lose their pension. We need to make an example of these people to put a stop to this nonsense. They need to fear us. In contrast, they think that they have immunity. they need to experience otherwise. Steve, any comments on that?
Well, the number one thing the other day when this was on our radar for the show itself, public safety is being compromised. And I look at Jeff Schrader, and I think he's plainly the sheriff of Jefferson County. He's plainly being caught in the middle.
He is. I know him, and I like him a lot. And hold on here. We just had a late-breaking text. And it's all about the money. That's what they said. It is all about the money. And they are really putting Sheriff Schrader in a very difficult situation with this. And to cut essential services when they have all of these other, they're doing all these other things with government money that's not within the context of what they're supposed to be doing. But I do agree with this listener. I think that this is punishment to the voters for not giving these bureaucrats more money. And the answer has got to be not to give them more money, but to put light on what is going on and put pressure on this. So with that, oh, my gosh, this is going to go so quickly. I did want to talk about impeachment just a little bit. Steve, you said that you had a couple of sound bites.
I do, and I'll put this to the two of you. You're going to like this. This, by the way, there's a new, you know, you would call it the impeachment proceedings, but it's also known as the Schumer Schiff Sham Show. So say that four times quickly.
I heard that. You can't, you know.
Okay,
what I want to do here, two sound bites real quick. The first one is the infamous Al Green, representative from Texas, and we've been hearing this one since last summer.
Poor guy.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
All right, now hold that thought. Okay. The newer one now is from the distinguished Mr. Schiff. This came up Wednesday.
The president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won.
Okay, two different statements, but they both, to me, say the same thing, and that is the fact that we can't trust the American people to vote the way we want them to, so we're gonna do something about that.
Well, and then you see in Jefferson County, if people do vote the way that they don't want, the bureaucrats don't like, then they in some ways punish them by releasing criminals onto the street. But my thoughts on this is, and I really have not watched all of this impeachment stuff. If you are watching it, I had a friend of mine text me. She's like, oh my gosh, Trump is so guilty. This is so bad. And I realized that what the Democrats are doing is they have the same narrative and they're continuing on and on and on with that. And they and people that are busy, they continue to hear obstruction of Congress, abuse of power. Those are, I think, the two. And then the other thing is that he has used the office for personal gain. He hasn't needed to use the office for personal gain. He was just fine as far as a successful businessman. But what they are accusing Trump of is exactly what they're doing. Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, use their office for personal gain. And I think that the truth is going to come out on this. But Steve, DeRoy Murdoch had an excellent piece in National Review. And I very quickly want to go through and let you know, my listeners, DeRoy just, he nailed it. And this is why President Trump is being impeached. He did the forbidden and denied Hillary Clinton her birthright. They've demanded that the Democrats have demanded Trump's unreleased tax returns, claimed he's mentally ill, proposed his ouster via the 25th Amendment, invoked Stormy Daniels, the Emoluments Clause, racism, Russiagate, Baltimore, and now the Ukraine-Orama impeachment saga. Now, just think. All of those things that they've been throwing at him, and he's still standing. I cannot believe it.
Not only is he standing, he's doing things. He just keeps doing things. He ignores this and keeps on doing it. I just think if you talk long enough, and that's what's going on with Green and Schiff, if you talk long enough, the truth actually comes out, you know? And that what they're saying is that's what this impeachment is all about.
Well, and I agree with you, Ben Martin, that the truth is going to come out. But this is why. Are you guys ready? Since Election Day 2016, the S&P 500 is up 56%. The Dow has climbed 60% and closed recently at a new record. Unemployment is at 3.5%, the lowest since 1969. Year-on-year, median wages for November were up 3.6%. Median household income after 8 years of G.W. Bush rose $401. which was 0.7%. Obama's two terms yielded 1.7%, and Trump is at 8.3%, and that's significant. We have the $1.5 trillion Trump GOP tax cuts and Jobs Act. Trump promised to cut two regulations for everyone imposed. The individual mandate is dead from Obamacare. Veterans now enjoy wider, faster medical choices. Free speech at colleges has been protected. The GOP Senate has confirmed 187 of Trump's federal bench nominees, including Supreme Court Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. Trump has signed numerous pro-life measures. He is going to be the first president to speak. Isn't that today or was
today?
Today. Yes.
At the March for Life. Pretty amazing. He authorized the Dakota and Keystone pipelines. 100 miles of the border wall are in place. The Senate adopted the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal. We abandoned the foolish and costly Paris global warming. Trump has modernized America's military. The president's personal diplomacy with North Korean dictator is still unfinished business. He visited the Western Wall in Israel and moved the capital. And once the size of two New Jerseys, ISIS territorial caliphate is completely erased. And my friends, that is why Donald Trump is being impeached.
Yes.
So.
And you missed the first phase of the China agreement, too.
Oh, that's right. And that was just implemented in 3 years. I mean, that's pretty impressive, Steve.
You know, there's actually two
unbelievable, really.
Medically related things that are on our radar right now. This new strain of flu coming out of China. But it's also been discovered that if you're listening to too much of the impeachment proceedings and Adam Schiff, you can get syphilis. Now, and the bad news is so far in the laboratory, it doesn't seem like penicillin will touch it.
Oh my gosh. I hope after today we're still on the air,
yeah.
Ben Martin.
Okay. Take that away.
Okay. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, the big game is right around the corner. It's the Chiefs and the Niners, and the place to watch the big game is at Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Join them for the big game, and you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. They have these great new roasted wings, and Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook, you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. For more information, go to my website, kimmunson.com. I have a tab there. You can click on that. That has all my sponsors, and you can get all the information right there. So we're going to go to break, and we have a very special show planned for you today. It's brought to you by the Harris family. Ben Martin, former Army Ranger, good friend, patriotic historian. We're going to go through some of the important speeches and documents and the events around them. And so this is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. In studio with me is my friend, former Army Ranger and a patriotic historian, Ben Martin. Ben, I am so excited about this. This year, you're going to be in once a month, and we're going to go through important speeches and documents of America's founding. And so let's jump in here. Where are we going to start?
We're going to start right by introducing the program for the year and then talking about the overall concept, if we can. And then we'll get right to the first event. So today we begin a new program for 2020. It's called Important Speeches and Documents of the American Founding. This new program will include one presentation each month, as you said, from January, which is the first one today, through December of 2020. Each program will be focused on a major figure, such as George Washington, the father of our country, or Abraham Lincoln, the father of our second founding, or a major event, such as the Revolutionary War, the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, ratification of the Constitution, or slavery. In each of these presentations, we will discuss some of the important speeches and documents produced by the principal players in conjunction with or in furtherance of the significant events of that period. It is also relevant to understand the environment under which the principal players produced those important speeches and documents. What were the dangers they faced? What were the weather conditions in some cases, or the living conditions? What were the stakes? By so focusing our presentations, we'll be better able to know the significant events and understand the courage it took to speak or to write their thoughts and or to take their actions and how they helped to influence or affect those events, and more importantly, to understand why those events were important then and are important to us now.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, so this is how we become American patriots, or maybe better American patriots. First, let us set a common understanding of patriot. Patriot is defined as a person who loves their country.
So it's not a pride thing. It's a love thing.
It's a love thing. Mm-hmm. And you have to. And James Wilson, an important founder who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and later became a justice on the first U.S. Supreme Court, famously said these words to that effect. Before something can become an object of your heart, it must first become an object of your mind.
Okay.
Well, he used the word head. So it's the same. It's the same thing as what he meant. In other words, one must know, must truly know something before they can truly love it.
And that is what we are going to go through this year.
That's exactly what we go through. So the vast majority of us Americans are rational and open-minded, and when we are able to better know the amazing founding heritage we have been given, we talked about gratitude earlier this morning. When that heritage becomes a prominent object of our mind, it will, without fail, soon become a prominent object of our heart, and we will become a true American patriot. Another important benefit of this knowledge and understanding of our founding heritage, most eloquently spoken by James Madison, our fourth president, and most famously known as the father of the Constitution, goes like this. A well-instructed people alone can be permanently a free people. I'm going to say that again for everybody to understand. A well-instructed people alone can be permanently a free people. Do not we all want to be permanently a free people? Of course we do. This first month's presentation, this program of important speeches and documents of the American founding, is focused on George Washington, the father of our country. It begins a series of three presentations focused on him. This first presentation involves four events. First, Washington accepting the commission of the Second Continental Congress to become the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, sometimes reduced to the acronym of CINC, Commander-in-Chief. He does this on 16 June, 1775. Next comes Washington's 2 July, 1776 inspirational remarks to his troops before the Great Battle of Long Island, which occurred 26 through 30 August of 1776. Then comes Washington's leadership as he leads the army through New Jersey with the British in hot pursuit, crossing the Delaware River, inspiring Thomas Paine to write the first section of The Crisis, which helps George Washington, General Washington, inspire the troops to cross again the Delaware River and win the great victory at Trenton. And the fourth event, at the end of 1776, the enlistments of much of the army are to end. Washington makes an inspired appeal and pledge to convince the troops to reenlist, and another appeal to Robert Morris, the great financier of the American Revolution, which backs Washington's pledge and leads to another great victory at Princeton. And it is called Washington's 10 Days, and we'll define that, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, which invigorates the troops and swells the ranks with new enlistments and saves what Washington defines in his acceptance speech as the glorious cause.
Okay. Shall we start with then Washington accepts the commission? Is that where you want to begin?
That's where we want to begin.
Okay, let's do that. And then after, you know what, why don't we, let's wait. Let's go to Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. And Jason, it's so It's so great to talk with Presidential Wealth Management while we're talking about President George Washington. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing good. I always enjoy listening to Ben talk as well.
Thank you.
I told you I went to one of the Douglas County Republican meetings, and you know, he was about the only interesting guy there, and they kept trying to give him the hook.
Oh, ouch. Okay. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Yesterday, we talked about the so-called strategy of buying last year's worst sector, which when we studied the actual results, it's kind of a dud.
Well, you're right, Kim, and so-called is a very accurate description. There's this stubborn belief, and some people have even pushed it as a strategy that last year's worst performer or worst sector becomes this year's best one, but the numbers don't back that up, Kim. Since 2008, that strategy, if you want to call it that, has underperformed, just staying invested in all the S&P sectors by almost 30%.
Okay, and Jason, I know you have put together an analysis of this and you've dug deeper. So what if we didn't just buy the absolute worst one, but we went into the bottom two or three to spread things out a little bit more?
So you're saying the worst of the worst stuff goes all the way to the bottom of the barrel. So we're going to buy the muck at the bottom and then the next two or three layers up that aren't quite as bad, right?
That's my question.
Go ahead, Ben. But yeah, that it actually helps, Kim, but I'm still not sure it's worth the brain damage over that same 12-year time period. If you bought the bottom two sectors, your average return was about 10.2%. If you spread it out to the bottom three, it's 10.3%. So it's better than the 7.8% you got in just the worst sector alone. But again, just staying in all the S&P sectors equally did 10.9. So I don't see the big deal.
So it was more work for nothing, basically.
Yeah, I can't find any reason why someone would really want to employ this strategy. Kim, if you're going to commit to doing something like this, and most of these, you know, if they're going to work, you have to do it year in and year out, it should at least show a reward over the long term. Maybe not every single year is it going to work, but over a decent amount of time, it should add value, and I don't see where this does. It didn't increase returns in any way that I can see.
Okay, but here's the question. The returns were lower, but did it reduce risk? Sometimes a lower return is a good trade-off if your risk goes down.
No, actually, it gets failing grades in that area, too. In all three scenarios, Kim, buying the worst one, two, or three sectors, the down years were significantly worse than the down years in the corresponding market numbers.
So less return, more risk. What do you think?
Yeah, I at least historically, that's what this has produced. So it's not a pool that I would wade into on purpose, that's for sure.
So upon further review, this is still a dud, and maybe it's just because concentrated sectors are so volatile. What if we did the same thing but just use broad asset class like large cap, small cap stocks, international, or so forth?
Well, Kim, I think that would be a real good conversation for Monday, but for some good reading over the weekend, folks can get the copy of this report that I put together on this subject at airpresidential.com. There's a lot of good info and numbers and thoughts in there. While you're there at the website, save your seat at our upcoming workshops on reducing taxes. And again, you can get that report and save your seat for the workshops at airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And at 7:30, Natalie will be at the switchboard, so you can give her a call and get all that information there. That phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And it's a great idea to sit down, do a discovery session with one of the great advisors over there at Presidential Wealth Management. Jason, thank you so much. I can't wait to talk to you on Monday.
All right. You guys have a great show. Have a good one, Ben.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Okay, bye-bye. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we are going to jump into Washington. George Washington accepts the commission. This was June 16, 1775. Ben Martin is in studio with me. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. In studio with me is former Army Ranger, my friend, patriotic historian, Ben Martin. It's great to have you here.
I'm happy to be here.
And let's jump in here. We're starting our series this year on important speeches and documents. And George Washington accepts the commission to lead the Continental Army.
Correct.
On June 16th, 1775. Tell us about this speech.
Well, let's start with on the 14th of June, 1775. 2 days before that, the Continental Congress created the Continental Army. And we call that, as a soldier, we call that Army's birthday. And that is 14 June, 1775. Now, we don't celebrate that as a nation. We celebrate Flag Day, which happened 2 years after the birth of the Army. And I can say this with all confidence. We wouldn't have a Flag Day if we didn't have an Army Day.
You think?
So the Continental Congress created the Army in 14 June. And then Sam Adams and John Adams nominated Washington to become its commander-in-chief, or CINC, C-I-N-C. Washington was chosen over John Hancock, who was the president of the Continental Congress at that time, because of Washington's military experience and the belief that a Virginian would better unite the colonies. He was considered also an incisive leader who kept his ambition in check. And if you read anything about Washington, you know how true that is, mm-hmm. keeping his ambitions in check. He was unanimously elected commander-in-chief, or unanimously nominated as commander-in-chief by Congress the next day. That's 15 June 75. Washington was told of this, and he told the Congress he would give them their answer the next day. So on the next day, 16 June, Washington appeared before Congress in uniform and gave an acceptance speech. And we have to look at this in just what they were talking about, what Washington really was. He did keep his ambition in check. Washington had all of the great virtues. Mr. President, though I am truly sensible of the high honor done me in this appointment, yet I feel great distress from a consciousness that my abilities and military experience may not be equal to the extensive and important trust. However, as the Congress desire it, I will enter upon this momentous duty and exert every power I possess in their service and for the support of the glorious cause. And that was a phrase that he coined, the glorious cause. And you can see by that, Washington would keep his ambition in check, because all he exhibited in that was humility and gratitude. So Washington now has to go and take charge of his army, which is surrounding the British troops, which are occupying Boston. So he travels there. He doesn't have any flights, so he has to take a buggy and pull by horses. He gets there in early July, about 2 weeks after the Battle of Breeds and Bunker Hill has taken place, and he takes command of the Continental Army. He sees an unorganized, undisciplined, and ragged army. He institutes regulations for uniforms and hygiene and training. He meets with and evaluates his officer corps, eventually promoting the good and removing the bad. By December of 1776, he has authorized and initiated a plan to oust the British from Boston. A 25-year-old Boston bookseller is sent 300 miles north to Fort Ticonderoga to retrieve the 50 cannons that Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys had captured there. In January of 1776, that young bookseller brings back those cannons over 300 miles of long stretches of water, crossing rivers and streams and snow-covered mountains and hills without losing one cannon. In the dark of night, Washington's men secretly moved those cannons up to the top of Dorchester Heights, which dominates Boston. When the British see the cannons positioned there, they realize the situation they're in. They hurriedly evacuate the town by 17 March, and the American forces take control of Boston without firing a single shot. Oh, by the way, that young bookseller was named Henry Knox, who will eventually become a general and a great hero of the Revolutionary War and the Secretary of War under President George Washington.
So he was a merchant. Merchants and farmers.
He was a bookseller. Yes, he was.
Okay.
So that's the first one. The second event, which we'll talk about today, and I wish we could go into these a lot more, but I ask everybody that is really interested in this, you can find this stuff online. You can just do a search of these different events, and you can read all about them. So the second event happens on 2 July, 1776. All of the British forces are now in New York Harbor. They're actually stationed in Staten Island, which you can see easily from in New York Harbor. And so they're there. They're gathering their strength. And Washington is looking out over this vast British war power arrayed before him. 30,000 British and Hessian soldiers, 10,000 British sailors, 300-plus warships. Washington sees this. He understands it, and he addresses the army. He has approximately 19 soldiers, and they're not all professional soldiers.
How many soldiers?
19,000.
Okay.
On the war effort, he says this: "The time is now at hand, which must probably determine whether Americans are to be freemen or slaves, whether they are to have any property they call their own, whether the farms and their houses are to be pillaged and destroyed, and they consigned to a state of wretchedness from which no human efforts will probably ever deliver them. The fate of unborn millions will now depend, under God, on the courage and the conduct of this army. Our cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us no choice but a brave resistance, or the most abject submission. This is all we can expect. We have, therefore, to resolve to conquer or die. Our own country's honor all call upon us for a vigorous and manly exertion. And if we now shamefully fail, we shall become infamous to the whole world. Let us, therefore, rely upon the goodness of the cause." He's again talking about the glorious cause, "and the aid of the Supreme Being, in whose hands victory is, to animate and encourage us to great and noble actions. The eyes of our country are now upon us, and we shall have their blessings and praises if happily we are the instruments of saving them from the tyranny mediated against them. Let us therefore animate and encourage each other and show the whole world that a free man contending for liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth." Through that great battle, and that is ended as a great American defeat, the British could have captured or destroyed the entire American army at that time, that first great battle. That would have ended the war then and there. But Washington had a different vision. Toward that vision, he exercised great leadership, and with the help of divine providence, and that was really true, they miraculously escaped across the East River without losing one soldier.
Well, and that's the story, if I remember right, that Washington was able to escape because a fog came in.
A fog came in and a wind. A wind that doesn't blow that way predominantly blew out of the harbor and kept the British out. And then the fog, it kept them. The fog, which was all through the morning and all through the night, kept the British from seeing us and kept the British ships from coming in. Because our soldiers were in boats, were in flat boats. And one of the things that we must mention, a great hero, was a man named Colonel John Glover, who there's a statue of him in New York now. And his...
Well, they haven't taken it down.
His men were called the Men from Marblehead, or the Soldiers from Marblehead, because that's where they came from. And they were all sailors. And he saved Washington. His men were the people that rowed those boats back and forth across the East River to save the men over and over that night. He was also the people that saved the army when they were running from the British going down through New Jersey. And we'll talk about that in the next episode. And then his men were also the men that rowed George Washington's army across the Delaware to attack Trenton.
This is so rich to hear these names and to hear these people and just think about what was going on and the story of Washington escaping there, because at that point in time, as you mentioned, if the British would have captured the Continental Army and George Washington, it would have all been over. But Washington had courage, and divine providence helped out on that as well. Ben, is this all on this particular one? I know that we're jamming us up because we're going to go through so much information, but you can get these speeches and writings online. Anything else on this before we go to break, and then we'll come back.
Sure.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, then we will be going through Thomas Paine and Washington reenlisting the troops at Trenton. Ben Martin's in studio with me. This is Kim Munson. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. In studio with me is Ben Martin, patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, friend, and we are going through this year the important speeches and documents of America's founding. The show is brought to you by the Harris family, and let's continue on here as we start this whole series. I'm loving this. I'm just loving this. So let's. What's the next thing we want to talk about?
So the next thing is our third of our four events that we're talking about in this segment, or in this presentation, this whole program today, and that is what Washington does after the great battle, the Battle of Long Island. So that battle takes place in August, as we talked about. And so now it's November, and the British drive the American army out of New York. Washington then led his drastically diminished and desperately disheartened army down through New Jersey. With the British army in hot pursuit, and again, he miraculously escaped their grasp, this time by furtively crossing the Delaware River. Then in late December, while he is in the protection of Philadelphia. It's late December when there is much despair among his troops and the glorious cause seems all but lost. He inspires Thomas Paine to write the first section of The Crisis and sends him to Philadelphia to have it printed and then bring it back. And then Washington uses that to stir his troops. So let's talk about the first part of that. And most people have heard this before, but it's always good to hear it again. So The Crisis, the first section by Thomas Paine. These are the times that try men's soul. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have the consolation with us that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is the dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if a celestial item, an article as freedom, should not be highly rated. And so that's the essence of what the first section of The Crisis is. Using that as an inspiration under Washington's leadership, they cross the ice-cluttered Delaware River during the night of 25 December, Christmas night, and the early morning of 26 December. And then they march 10 miles on treacherous snow and ice-covered roads to surprise and utterly defeat the Hessians in the Battle of Trenton on 26 December.
So if I remember right, when we were doing the study with you, that if the British, or, well, the Hessians had been paying attention, that they could have followed Washington's army because of the blood in the snow from the guys
that didn't have shoes.
They didn't have shoes, and their feet had been cut by the ice. I can't imagine it. Yeah. I just can't imagine it, Ben Martin.
It's amazing. For 10 miles.
10 miles.
So anyway, they do, and they get there. And in that battle, just a side note, the fifth president of the United States almost died. James Monroe was there, and he was shot in the leg and was going to bleed to death pretty quickly. But he had made friends with a doctor who was in a house. He was guarding a section of the road, and he made friends with that. And that doctor saved his life.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it's an amazing thing. So let's go on to our fourth event,
okay,
to keep this going. But there's so much that could be said about that, and I recommend to everybody to look up the Battle of Trenton and read about it, because it's just an amazing turnaround. At that time, like I said, the American troops were very much in despair. And this really brought their spirits back up.
Okay, just a quick question. I heard that Betsy Ross had some role in the Battle of Trenton.
That's one of the answers. That's one of the things that probably happened, but there's not proof of that. You know, okay. she was a very handsome woman, shall we say. And there was a British force there in Bordentown where they were stationed, which was very close to Trenton, and they could have come and changed the battle, that whole battle, but he was occupied at the time.
Okay.
So we go on to the fourth. After the American Army's stunning victory at Trenton, the British command was aroused. The Hessians were eager for revenge. Over 1,600 Hessian and British troops from across New Jersey were mobilized to converge on Princeton, which is right next to Trenton, reinforced by an additional 1,000 dispatched from New York by Britain's General Howe. Cornwallis, at the head of another 1,000 British troops, arrived to supervise mopping up operations against the Americans. I wish I could tell you the whole battle right now, but it would take more than a whole program to do it. But it's an amazing battle, and I really recommend everybody.
This is the Battle of Princeton?
The Battle of Princeton.
Okay.
Yes. And it's just an amazing thing. And he says, with this, Washington now faces immediate crisis because on 1 January, just a few days, the terms of enlistment of most of the Army, the American Army, would expire, leaving Washington with only 1,000 soldiers, and he was now confronted by a mobilized and enraged British force, which he could dispose only with whatever new recruits and militia could be mustered once the long-suffering regulars went home. So with just one day remaining in their enlistments, now he's at the 31st of January, Washington made a passionate appeal and a pledge to his troops, a special bounty of $10 each, a phenomenal sum at the time, if they agreed to reenlist for one more month. "My brave fellows," Washington said, "you have done all I have asked you to do, and more than can be reasonably expected, but your country is at stake. Your wives, your houses, and all that you hold dear. You have worn yourselves out with fatigue and hardship, but we know not how to spare you. If you will consent to stay one month longer, you will render that service to the cause of liberty and to your country, which you properly can never do under any other circumstance." And then Washington requested to Robert Morris to provide the money, because Washington had none, and the Congress had not given him any. Morris said that he had already contributed alone all of his personal funds to Congress, besides mortgaging his business and property to raise additional money. Morris borrowed the money from his neighbors on the eve of New Year's, the 31st. He got up early that morning and started waking up his neighbors. When they said, "What collateral will you give us?" And he pledged his word, his honor, to secure the loans. Washington and the Continental Congress go on to win the Revolutionary War and firmly establish America's place in the world, the principles of liberty in our Declaration, and our remarkable Republican self-government with the U.S. Constitution. But without Washington's outstanding courage, strength of character, and inspirational leadership at such critical times, all would have been lost in the first battle, or if not the first battle, the first year. And America would have been only a fleeting idea and a mere footnote in the annals of history.
Wow. My comments on this, Ben Mart, we have just a couple of minutes, is it's very relevant to what is going on today. And I find it absolutely ironic that, with this whole impeachment thing, Democrats, and the Democrat Party of today is not the Democrat Party of JFK.
That's true.
The radical activists that have taken over this, they've done it throughout our schools, throughout our education, to denigrate our Constitution. They've said that it was written by a bunch of old white guys.
Yes.
That were all in for their personal interest. You just talked about Robert Morris. He
Yes.
mortgaged everything.
Everything.
And then he went to his neighbors and asked for more. And it wasn't because of personal gain. It was because of liberty. And
that's true.
We stand on the shoulders of giants. We are Americans. And I think we're in a very serious time here as well. And what we're talking about is so relevant. But what we've seen, I find so ironic with this whole impeachment thing, is these people that have denigrated the American founding and the American Constitution are now on the floor at the Capitol talking about the founders and the American Constitution.
Yeah. Well, they don't know it all.
Don't know it all, but I think that they do know that inherently Americans still value that, and that's why they're trotting that out.
Right. And that's really wrong to use that. If I can just say one other thing really quickly. Frederick the Great called those 10 days, those two victories at Trenton and Princeton, to save the American cause, the glorious cause. Washington, he says, this is Frederick the Great, "Washington's victories at Trenton and Princeton were the most splendid gained in the 18th century." And David Palmer, a former historian, professor of mine at West Point, said it best. Had he done nothing before or after Washington's 10 days alone, from 25 December 1776 to 3 January 1777, would have ranked him high among history's greatest generals?
Well, to inspire people, when you know that you've got the enemy right around the corner and they're mad. They're pretty mad because you just surprised them at Trenton, and you have to encourage these guys to stay and put their lives on the line. These American speeches are so amazing. Ben Martin, I am so excited about this whole thing that we're going to be doing this year.
I am too. Thanks for that opportunity, and thanks the Harris family for that too.
And people can go online. It seems like maybe we should probably figure out a way to get the links on the website or something too. I'll talk to Zach about that, but let's try to do that so it'll be easy for people.
Sure.
We'll go to work on that. So our quote for today, Thomas Paine, because we were talking about him, he said, "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it." And the glorious cause was liberty. Yes?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. Ben Martin, it's so great to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Happy Friday to all of you. God bless you. God bless America.
Riding high, through the mountains climbing, twisting, turning further from my home.